IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 66 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl. I'm joined today by Ryan and Dave. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey.
Thank you very much. And I got to say, we've had a lot of people giving us the thumbs up and the like and so forth. And we want to encourage everybody else who hasn't done that yet to share this podcast with your friends and relatives.
And thank you, everybody, for the support. It's nice to know we're not speaking into the void. That's always appreciated.
I mean, we'd still do it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, totally still do it. You guys get to just hear us riff. But at least people are listening and enjoying it. That feels great.
So we literally have been talking for 45 minutes before we push the record button today.
and that's the thing, right? The original genesis of this show was, well, this is what we would have been talking about anyway. We should just press record. Just press record ought to be our mantra in all.
That should have been the name of the podcast.
Oh, that'll be the next podcast where we launch the other stuff that didn't make it. It's just press record.
Very good. All right. So topic number one today is about artificial intelligence. And, you know, we've got kind of this minor theme going on where we talked about, you know, the morals of technology, and that's a piece that we come back to again and again. We've got a couple of different articles here about whether or not AI is something that is being used appropriately. And, you know, there are people calling to stop developing it for certain things like recognizing criminals. And just, I think it was yesterday or the day before from this recording, this guy arrested, falsely accused in Detroit because of facial recognition and AI. And it just turns out he happens to be an innocent black man who is being accused because the technology confused him with somebody else.
Well, I want to actually clarify that a little bit, because there's a key point that is in the reporting and it is in the discussion of AI that is getting left out. And I think this is important. The system was designed to augment human decision-making. And AI experts have always talked about this being about augmenting human decision-making. There's a big warning on the use of the technology within policing that says, you know, this is to be used as a lead that you then have to then go out and do the legwork to see if this is useful.
Right. Don't be lazy.
And it's proving that people are just assuming it's AI. It came out. It must, the facial recognition is completely is the evidence, and that's missing the point. Now, anybody in technology should be going, well, yeah, that's what always happens, right? Technologists give a tool, often provide a tool, and the consumer of the tool often simplifies that dramatically in terms of their interpretation. It is on us as technologists to be taking a critical eye at this and saying, you know what, if we can't deliver it in a way that actually is delivered the way we want the use case to run, we've got to be careful about delivering it.
See, and that's exactly where I read the article and I had like this freeze moment in my brain that says, but that's not what it was originally intended for. It is not a criticism of whether or not AI can do what it's designed to do. It is that it's being used to do things that it was not originally designed for. Just last week, we had a conversation among a number of owners in the solution provider community. They run small and large solution providers around the country. And we're trying to say, well, what's working? What are you learning and what's happening out there? And one of the suggestions that came up from a solution provider up in the Midwest, by the way, marketing application that they have applied to their database as well as profiles of their target customer to optimize the message delivery in their outbound digital marketing activities, right? That they are on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, out there, that's cool. But if the message happens to be perfectly tuned to who is reading it based on their profile, well, that sounds a little bit more efficient. their response rates have gone up dramatically. It is built into the application. I hear that story and I think that is precisely one of the application use cases that we intended AI to do. Recognizing a face and then inferring from that recognition that that person may or has committed a crime, that's not what it was intended right. for. And despite right. what you might see in a Hollywood movie, that is not what it is capable of doing. And that's where things go wrong. Use the tool for what it was intended for, get fantastically valuable improvements. Use the tool incorrectly, fall on your face and go, well, the AI is bad. Oh, the AI no. is not bad. The application is bad.
People are fundamentally lazy, but when you combine that with something where you say, hey, this predicts whether or not somebody will have criminal behavior, like I hope all your alarm bells go off. Like
that should. It totally should. Because
literally my reaction to that is, but I don't want to have to buy new eyeballs in a back alley. And for those of you who don't get the movie reference to that, you can ping me afterwards and I will share my thoughts.
But on top of that, it's layered with the fact that we need to understand that the data sets that are going into this are also part of the problem. And for example, we're having very critical conversations about the justice systems and the outcomes on it. If we run the data through and show that, you know, hey, we're gonna do predictive analysis on the data, it will likely give us data that shows what has previously happened to continue to happen. But as I think we're generally reckoning with right now, that may not be the outcome we actually intend to happen. And that includes a lot of historical biases or a lot of, you know, potential flaws in the way that's been delivered that then get programmatically added to these systems. That is something that we can't just assume that we're giving it the previous data and it'll do a great job. That's a false assumption.
Well, and the quick start guide to all of this AI technology is just plug it in and it will learn on its own. Except you've set a seed that it learns from. And you know, the to me, another piece of this is, well, wait a minute, I get the you know, inclination that you say, well, let's just stop researching this, but the genie's out of the box. You can't not research it. At some point, we will research past this problem and figure it out, but you got to spend the money to do that.
Right. And by the way, I saw that movie where we just teach it. At the end of the movie, we all die. So let's not just assume that it's going to learn on its own. We have to do the research. We have to do the hard work. We've got to take the critical eye at this. And by the way, we were talking about this is not a blame the user situation. If it's being misused, we've got to reexamine, you know, are we capable of putting this technology in front of people and have it be used effectively? If that's not the case, that means we just have more. It's not ready. It's time to reinvest, reevaluate, put continued effort on it. I'm confident we can get useful use cases out of this kind of stuff, but it's not always going to be easy.
See, but that's exactly the point, right? Our message, bring it back home to people who work in the business of technology. What is your takeaway and what is your action item? There are fantastically valuable tools inside your management and monitoring systems, inside of your storage utilization applications, inside marketing applications. There are appropriate use cases that will make you more efficient, your customers more effective. You should absolutely be leveraging AI. If you're not using AI as one of the layers in your security protocols, you're missing out on stuff, right? Please don't walk away from the concept and abandon those effective use cases. Be a smart user and avoid the inappropriate applications.
And that gets back to you should delegate, but don't abdicate. And right. I don't think it's going to be a good defense in court to say, well, I had an RMM and I plugged it in and it monitored and none of the alarms went off. So it must be safe. You can't totally possibly have ransomware. All righty then. Topic number two.
Well, let's move on to two because I'm going to start by just taking a quick moment and go, I hope my all these listeners are not only listening to this podcast, but also listen to me over on a show called Business of Tech, where I do some news. Because I talked last week about Apple and some of their moves around credit. And I projected, and I said during that conversation, I said, you know where I think this is going? I totally think this is going into a managed service. I think you're going to get to the point where Apple is going to offer you all things Apple, and they're going to throw in the hardware, the software, and a bunch of services and everything that I need, and it's going to be a managed service. And I think you need to be aware of that. And lo and behold, we are recording this on Thursday. Yesterday, Apple announced the purchase of an RMM technology. And so I just want to take my quick victory lap and go, I told you, everybody. I told you they were moving toward managed services. And now they've made another move. Now, do I think they're necessarily going to build a managed service that looks exactly like your typical SMB-focused managed services? No, I don't think it's going to look exactly like that. But I'll tell you, I do think they're going to have a pretty comprehensive service offering that's going to look in some ways similar. And if I squint kind of funny, it might look the exactly like have enough in common. But I think this is part of a growing trend. I talked about on the show, I talked about Samsung having their Samsung Access, which is a bundle of services, device, and Microsoft 365. And I think all of this is changing the conversation around managed services. And Carl, you even threw in a wrinkle with this by another use of the word managed service.
Yeah, so Amazon Web Services announced a low-code, no-code interface, which they called a service. Not just a service, a managed service you can subscribe to. And their use of that term has absolutely nothing to do with preventive maintenance IT service provider, like not even in the ballpark. It's freaky that it uses the same words, managed and services together. But you know, I mean, that's as Ryan pointed out right before we hit record, that's where we started this podcast, right? Is what does the term managed services mean anything anymore? And Dave, you kind of, I don't know, surprised me a bit. I know you're a fanboy of Apple, but you said, "Hey, I'd sign up for that," and
I would totally buy that. I mean, let me throw that out there. So I'm a little baby business, right? So I don't have any employees; it's just me, and I'm even an IT guy. And if you told me Apple would include in my Apple Care monitoring and basic management and policy management of my machine, absolutely, I would sign up for that. Why wouldn't I? Going straight to them to have them do it? Oh, absolutely. Please take on some of that responsibility for me.
But then again, that fits with their business model of their business is not about the device. It is about the experience of owning and using the device. That is their shift away from revenue dependence on the iPhone and towards all of their monthly subscription services to add, again, apologies for the overuse of the word, to add a service on top of that service is actually a really good idea. If I can subscribe to your device and its capabilities, and then you will come along with it to make sure my experience is positive, that's the most logical definition I can think of as a total solution from a device management point of view. Now, what's fascinating, again, is that when this article came out and we started to look at, hey, Apple's now going to get into the backyard of small local MSPs, my first reaction was, you know, I'm thinking it's 2008 or 2009, and several of us were standing, as we did back in the day, in a hotel lobby bar somewhere, having a deep conversation about, you know, this thing that we have carved out as an RMM and a PSA, that functional category, there's no reason that you can't automate that inside the silicon of the device itself, i.e. Intel vPro. There are virtualization and remote capabilities. They were the first ones to come out with the ability to remotely brick a device based on that vPro technology. And it obviously does a lot of other things. My comment back then was, well, why wouldn't Intel, of all people, just include that remote monitoring and management capability in the chip itself? If I can build all of the other things into the chip, the system and the application and all of that. Why not build in the remote hooks?
This is almost like a circular argument. Well, at the time, what Intel wanted to do was figure out how to turn it into a service, which is to say labor was involved, which is higher end, higher volume, you know, blah, blah, blah. They could make a bunch more money. And because they couldn't figure out a way to sell it as a subscription with labor involved, they just never really did very well going down that road. And this is, now we've come full circle. So, Dave, you don't think Apple's going to have human beings actually monitoring your watch, right? This is going to be a completely automated thing, and it either works or it doesn't.
Sure, but why wouldn't I sign up for that? Like, why wouldn't I have the manufacturer help me with that, particularly if it's all under warranty? And I'm literally alluding to this idea of an Apple subscription where I just keep getting new hardware, right? Like, they just provide my hardware, and every 3 years I'm going to get a new, because they already do it on my phone. I could completely see them doing it from my Mac, and I move into, like, I just get all things Apple as a service. And as part of that, their little monitoring may say, you know what, we're seeing hardware failure. Why don't you just bring that in and we'll swap you out now, right? And that's a great way of just, yeah, I would sign up for that service in a second.
That is how GE and Rolls-Royce sell aircraft engines, right? It is continuously monitored, predictively maintained, and you don't bring an airplane in for engine maintenance when you feel like there might be a problem, and you don't bring it in when it is a regular interval on just, hey, it's time for my monthly tune-up. It comes in because when it was in flight, the engine pinged the server and said, by the way, I'm noticing a variation, and therefore it goes in for service. That made sense 20 years ago for things that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. The fact that we've been able to condense that down to something that I will pay tens or hundreds of dollars for a month, that is a fascinating automation. But again, will it be humans, or will it be a platform that local engineers maintain as humans?
Is this a heads up for a disruption, kind of the classic disruption where somebody takes some tiny little, not very profitable piece of your business off of the bottom of what you're offering, steals it away, and now you have to refigure out how to provide value to your existing customers. And in the meantime, somebody else is over here on the side building another business.
To the degree that disruptive innovation is a predictive model, and Clay Christensen was very careful to say it's an analytics model, not necessarily predictive, but I apply it that way. And to the degree that it meets the fingerprint of what's going on, I would say absolutely it is. And the remedy to that disruptive innovation is, you better find something that you can do that they're going to give that piece away for free.
Right. So let me make it practical.
Radically low cost. You better find out a way to do something higher up the stack that is of more value, because they're about to come in and take away your commoditizing platform.
So let me make this, I'm going to play the dream game and make this practical for people. Cause I know there's a bunch of listeners going, well, that's just Apple, Dave. You just love the Apple stuff, and it's not going to happen over on my little side of the world because I'm using Windows or Microsoft. Or yeah, Samsung has this offering around their phones. You don't think they offer, last I checked, they offer laptops and desktops, like they offer laptops too, right? So I can completely envision them saying, I want some of that sweet, sweet recurring revenue, and doing exactly the same move. Like, and by the way, let me partner this with another approach. If you're thinking of this from a security perspective, the real security nuts are all focused on the idea of the zero trust environment, where what you're doing is you're limiting the access to the data to just the people that absolutely need it. And you're focusing on securing the data more than you're focused on securing all of those endpoints. I.e. zero trust means I just don't trust any of those devices out there. I've just given up on that. Instead, I'm going to make sure that it's the true least privilege, least access, and I'm going to secure my data. And I'm just going to assume it's craziness out there. you combine those two ideas, if we're moving architecturally towards zero trust and we give up on that, and if it's just sort of good enough that the manufacturers handle some of the basics, I can plug those two trends together and go, yeah, I see a squeeze coming, everybody. Like,
and you know, I didn't want to mention this, so I'm only going to mention it very late in this discussion when we're almost out of time, but you know, you almost said this. I thought this is where you were going to go, Dave, when you mentioned Samsung. Microsoft owns what used to be called Intune until 20 minutes ago, but they own all of the tools to do exactly this with all of that entire Windows interface.
Yep.
And they just allow us to set it up, install it, figure out what to monitor and where to set the levels and all that. But like, they could literally be doing exactly what Apple is doing.
Well, Carl, we're actually agreeing, because embedded in Samsung Access is Microsoft 365. So right. I could rephrase everything I just said about Samsung with Microsoft, and then and it all still be true. By the way, they've got Surface. They've got like, so it's, I just happen to use Samsung because I think they're slightly further ahead. And I also think of the way I'm also thinking about it is in solving the billing problems. So for the reason I think Apple's so far ahead and compelling on this is they've got a thing called Apple Card, and they've already announced the interest-free payments for 12 months on any new hardware that I buy. Like, they've already thought through all of this. The others are going to figure it out too. Apple just happens to be leading the march on it.
See, and again, by the rules of the concept of disruptive innovation, you might say, your reaction, if you are a local established managed service provider, your reaction might be, yes, but I can do it better. We're more complete. We're more advanced. But the rules of disruptive innovation say, yeah, that's exactly the point. Because you are bigger, better, faster in what you offer, you are disruptible by something that is good enough. And that is given away as an inclusion into a bundle of services they're already paying for. Disruption does not happen because they outperform you. It is because they deliberately underperform you in an area where your customers are okay with good enough. And that's what we're talking about here. You have to figure out, if remote desktop monitoring for AV incidents is good enough, like if I could automate that, take a human out of it, I don't need a person at a desktop watching the blinking lights. If that's good enough for a machine to do, it will go that direction. And your question has to be, okay, but what is not good enough in the customer's environment that requires local human intervention in order to solve the problem? Move up the stack into the application and knowledge level, you got a business.
And thus, we define our entire history as IT service providers.
Well, I think I'll pause here because we're out of time on this one, but this seems one of those bits where, like, come on, community, we just said a whole bunch. I'm expecting many comments and tweets and noise on that.
Somebody's got to be pissed off.
Somebody's got to be angry at us.
but.
Alrighty. So our continuing, and unfortunately, it looks like it'll continue for another 3 months. Topic is life after the pandemic. So what will our business look like? And we've decided today to talk about, okay, so everybody moved everything up and they moved it all to July and August. And so are we actually going to have conferences in October? You know, because Channel Pro, ASCII, everybody else, they keep moving them up, reschedule.
No, next question. So, all right. So I'm going to kick things off because we're recording this on Thursday. On Monday morning, I've released a video on my YouTube channel where I actually did my second bit of, if I was a channel chief, what would I be doing? And my recommendation in that piece was, I actually believe to just give up on the physical events.
Just give up on 2020 or on physical events altogether.
2020, for sure 2020. And here's my logic, and I'll repeat it again here for this, is look, I think it's just way too turbulent and uncomfortable, and you don't know enough in order for it to be a safe bet. At best, you have a diminished experience. At worst, it gets canceled last second, and either way, you have all of these resources tied up in trying to do it that you could redeploy in other ways. if I was a channel chief, and I said it on my video on this, is if I was a channel chief, I'd just say, I'm out. Like, I'm just pulling the ripcord on all of this, because I can take all of those assets and start trying things now, knowing that I haven't got this figured out. But by the time everyone else gets smart enough to go, oh, you know, this stuff didn't actually happen, I'm already ahead with a data bank of testing and failures and successes and I'm ahead blazing a trail while they're all catching up. And so because I don't actually think any of it's going to happen. The data tells me that it's not getting a whole lot better. I listened to scientists who seem to tell me that like all of the conditions, like indoors and groups and stuff, is all really bad. And I just go, it's a bad bet. Just give up. It's not happening.
Well, see, and here's where that logic goes into action for the future. We all lived through the original wave of March, April, May, of the events that were originally scheduled that were quickly and reactively moved online to a virtual platform. And most of them were terrible. Most of them were boring and they were not interested. They didn't keep people's attention. They did not bring big value for the attendee.
The big exception being the SMB Online Conference.
Because that was designed virtual on purpose. Thank
which,
you
by the
much.
Way, I say in my video too. So yeah, but yes.
Carl was a soothsayer once
he
again.
So yeah, but keep going.
But see, this is the thing. If you do your plan for the real world and then again have to pull the plug, go online, reactively do that, you're going to deliver that same kind of a non-value experience for the attendees, for the sponsors. Everybody complained about those things. But for those that happened in, I'll go late May, like June, early June, and the ones that we're starting to see come out now, online events aren't nearly as painful. They are designed for the purpose of online. They are designed for interactivity. They are built. It's one of those, you know, take lemons and make lemonade. You're not here to complain that you couldn't do it in person. Now what can we kind of figure out and kludge together online? Online is the reality. What can you do? I am living this literally in real time, because I get on an airplane and go places for a job, and I have for more than 20 years, and that's not possible right now. And so part of what's really good about our business is for 6 years or so, we've been preaching agile business transformation. And now we are agile business transforming, right? we are drinking this Kool-Aid and having to learn, what can we do? Well, one of the hardest questions that we were trying to answer 6 months ago was, if I go on site to do an in-depth training program, business sales effectiveness, right? If I bring together 30 people, put them in a room, the only logistical way that makes any sense is that must be one class of people who all have exactly the same programming experience. If I have 300, I can break out into rooms and tracks, and I can isolate and customize your experience because there's enough quantity to get critical mass. But at a number of 30, that absolutely positively wasn't possible. Fast forward to 2 weeks ago, and I'm having this conversation with a client, and they say, you know, we're still really interested in doing modules and tracks that are not universal to the entire audience. And I was like, well, funny you should suggest that, because on Zoom, I can do breakout rooms, I can do virtual sharing, I can have moderators pop in and out of classrooms. It's a tool built for the purpose of small populations having custom experiences. We didn't change our objective. We did not change what we were trying to do. It's still just the same outcome that we want to deliver. It's just that we're not saying, I can only do it online, that sucks. Now I can legitimately say, hey, online is better if you use it for its strengths.
So Carl, what do you threw this out there. Do you think we're going to be doing this stuff in October?
Well, you know, you and I are at opposite ends of the spectrum with regard to positive versus pessimistic.
Oh yeah, I'm Debbie Downer. I know that.
So I have airline tickets for us for October to go to three different countries.
Yep.
And I am just now, you know, as we flip the calendar from June to July thinking, I'm glad I got refundable tickets.
Right? I, Carl, you're a dear friend and I will never bet against you.
But, because I would go, but A, would another country let me in? Well, and there, B, would they let me out of my hotel under, you know, threat of imprisonment?
Signs point to no.
But I mean, we have to come out at some point. So, I mean, I am scheduled to speak at three events, physical events in two different states across the United States in October. And so even within the United States, the question is, will that happen? Or, you know, and there really isn't anything, you know, much scheduled for November.
So I'll tell you, my counterpoint to that is, so I recently was asked to speak at an event in a populated current hotspot city in October. And I said to them, no. And this is why I said that. I said, frankly, the A, I don't believe it's going to happen, but B, I do not want to waste my time or yours in building to something on that uncertainty. So my statement of when I started this, my little rant at the beginning saying move up, pivot it, I'm living that. In that I don't believe it's going to happen. I'd rather spend my energies on things that I can place bets on that I believe will occur versus the uncertainty.
And just for the record, and I know we're out of time, but I have signed paperwork for one of these three. So that makes it seem a little more real to me.
Dude, I have opening day baseball tickets. I mean I still have them.
Opening day.
I still have them.
Very good. All right. Well, we want your feedback. When do you think we're all going to be 100% back to normal and beautiful and life is all good and we're all going to sit and go down the same food trough at a 100 person event in a hotel? So
please let us know. Again, we're loving the conversation. We're loving interacting with and hearing what people are thinking. Please reach out to us and tell us what you think, because it's been super fun having this be an ongoing dialogue.
All righty. And that will do it for episode 66 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.